Shalom, welcome to another episode of Inspiration from Zion. I'm Jonathan Feldstein, and I have the privilege of being your host, coming to you from the Judean Mountains here in Israel. I like to refer to it as the original Bible Belt. Inspiration from Zion is a program of the Genesis 123 Foundation, whose mission is to build bridges between Jews and Christians with Israel, in ways that are new, unique, and meaningful. I pray that you will find this all of those. Through this program, we're excited to connect you to people and stories in and relating to Israel to give you a window to look through, experiencing aspects of life here that you might otherwise not otherwise know about. We want this to be interactive, so please be in touch with us at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com and send along any questions and any comments about any topic anytime. Or you can reach us at genesis123.co. or follow and like Inspiration from Zion on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Stay tuned until the end, where, as always, we offer you an exciting opportunity, and please feel free to share this with others who will also find it of interest. Today, this week, we're marking the anniversary in 1968 of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. And in preparing for this conversation, and even now as I begin to talk about it, I find myself getting very emotional, as I have in the past. I realize what an incredible legacy he had in such a short time, not even 40 years. And I liken my experience, how I'm feeling now, to when I read the end of the book of Deuteronomy and the end of Moses' life. Another great leader, great biblical leader, who lived three times as long and led the Jewish people from slavery to freedom, and Dr. Martin Luther King, whose life was a third as long and also was so essential, not just in leading Black Americans from slavery or at least lack of civil rights to freedom, but also as a solid voice for America and the world. And I just, there's never a time when I take pause to think about him that I don't think, what a great loss. And if he were still alive today, what a sound, solid, necessary voice he would be for us today. And to discuss him and his life and his legacy, I am really thrilled, I'm honored and blessed to have his niece, Dr. Alveda King. I've gotten to know Alveda King over the last couple of years. I admire her tremendously for so many reasons. She wrote a lovely endorsement for our book, Israel the Miracle. A few months ago, we got to spend a really lovely Shabbat dinner together when I was near her community, and she came out with her son and daughter-in-law and a couple of other important people in the community, and that was a blessing. And Alveda King is a leader in her own right. She's a political leader, religious leader, an author, public speaker, and a TV host and commentator, just to name a few. And I'm excited. When I saw her just several weeks ago, we were speaking about Dr. Martin Luther King, Dr. King, I'll refer to him, and how she was 17 when he was assassinated and remembers him very vividly. Alveda, it's a delight to have you, really is. I feel like you're filling in gaps for people like us who only know of your uncle through his legacy. And I'm grateful for you taking time to share a little bit personally about him.
It is such a joy to join you and your audience. And I know we have audio and probably online video and all of that. You'll be showing some pictures and things like that as well. It is wonderful to join you and talk about my uncle, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And yeah. Of course, he passed away on April 4th, and this is during that anniversary time when we commemorate and remember him. And it's a joy to do that with you.
Right. So I'm trying to put myself in your shoes as a teenager. With him as your uncle, you know, uncles, I think, I have a very special relationship with their nieces and nephews. I see that through my own grandchildren and how my kids and my son-in-law's siblings interact with my grandchildren. Can you tell us just some of your own personal reflections that wouldn't be out on Wikipedia or in all of the articles and all the things that people are remembering him for this week?
I can certainly do that. And actually, I was 17 the year that he was assassinated, and then the next year I was a young woman, a teenager, and yet a young woman. And the next year, my dad, his brother, Reverend Alfred Daniel Williams King, walked me down the aisle as a young virgin bride. And a week later, my dad was killed
Oh, gosh.
under very mysterious circumstances. They were like the Kennedy brothers. And that would have been President John Kennedy and his brother, Bobby Kennedy, of course. And in many ways, like Moses and Aaron as well. And so I remember him in context of being my dad's brother and, of course, my uncle. And we called him Uncle ML. His children and my Aunt Christine King Ferris's children called my daddy Uncle AD. And
Wow.
my mother wrote a book, ML and AD King, Two Brothers Who Dared to Dream. And so
Wow.
that's the context of our legacy and the way that I remember my uncle. Of course, he was a wonderful Baptist preacher. He had a personal relationship with Jesus Christ as his Lord and Savior in his latter years. As a young man, he studied all the religions of the world, and he was very impressed by Gandhi, the philosopher, the lawyer philosophy, and with the theory or the premise of nonviolence. My uncle was inspired by that. However, people need to know that my uncle, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., was a Christian preacher during his later years. If you can call them later, he was killed when he was 39, so he was still a young man. So that is the uncle that I know. I remember his laughter. He had a beautiful laugh, a beautiful kind of baritone voice. He and my dad both could sing very well. They liked to shoot pool. People don't know that. They enjoyed pool, and just wonderful man and a wonderful man of God. I like to read his sermons and his prayers as much as I know his speeches. I Have a Dream, Letter from a Birmingham Jail, etc. But some of his prayers, when he prayed a prayer of repentance and asked God to forgive him and asked Jesus to guide him, his own testimony, A Knock at Midnight, it was in Montgomery. I don't know if their home had been bombed or not yet. And then we had Selma and all of that. But he said, God, I'm tired. I'm weary. And if you don't help me, I don't know how to lead these people. Sounded like Moses to me when he was praying. And he said he heard a voice say, Martin Luther, stand up for truth, stand up for justice. And lo, I will never leave you, even until the ends of the earth. And so he had that beautiful personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And when I think about it, my grandfather was more like, take care of the least of these, the servant's heart, and all of that. My dad, the miracles of Jesus. And Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the love of God, the love of Jesus, loving each other, learning to live together as brothers and sisters, and not perishing together as fools.
Do you have what inspired him? I mean, of all of the leaders in the civil rights movement in the 1950s and 60s and people who never made it to that, who didn't have the spotlight that he did, was there one defining moment? Was there one thing that motivated him?
The moment I gave you was that knock at midnight when you heard the voice of Jesus. That was his defining moment when he heard the voice of Jesus in his kitchen at midnight over a cup of coffee. Of course, he was inspired by his father, his mother, his grandmother, all of those kinds of things. He was inspired both by those around him, Dr. Benjamin Mays over at Morehouse College, of course. And we mentioned Gandhi. And others, many. He was inspired. He was a philosopher himself, very well read, very educated. And so all of those things, of course, impacted him. But his most defining moment would have been when he had that prayer, that knock at midnight. He also was a strong advocate for Israel. He really was very strong. He wrote and spoke about supporting Israel, praying for the peace of Jerusalem. Jerusalem. In his own words, he says, it's a no-brainer. We have to support Israel. And he was very clear on his stand with that as well.
The restoration of Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel was an earth-shattering event. For Christians, it was a confirmation that God always keeps his covenantal promises. Today,
We are blessed to see God's fingerprints in the modern miracle of the land of Israel playing out in our lives among the people and in the state of Israel. This year, on the occasion of Israel's 75th anniversary, the Genesis 123 Foundation has been privileged to bring together 75 Christian leaders from around the world to lend their unique voices, sharing their personal faith experiences relating to Israel and their in-depth insight into Israel's history and spiritual significance to create an historical, one-of-a-kind, high-end coffee table book, Israel the Miracle. Israel the Miracle's stunning imagery will fill your home with the hope of fulfilled promises and conversations about Israel. It's a perfect gift to anybody for any occasion, and most of all, to yourself. You'll also be a blessing to Israel, knowing that the proceeds will go to bless Israelis of all backgrounds. Be a part of Israel the Miracle and bring the land, the people, and the state of Israel into your heart and into your home. Visit israelthemiracle.com to get your limited edition copy today. The restoration of Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel was an earth-shattering event. For Christians, it was a confirmation that God always keeps his covenantal promises. Today, we are blessed to see God's fingerprints in the modern miracle of the land of Israel playing out in our lives among the people and in the state of Israel. This year, on the occasion of Israel's 75th anniversary, the Genesis 123 Foundation has been privileged to bring together 75 Christian leaders from around the world to lend their unique voices, sharing their personal faith experiences relating to Israel and their in-depth insight into Israel's history and spiritual significance, creating an historical, one-of-a-kind, high-end coffee table book, Israel the Miracle. Israel the Miracle's stunning imagery will fill your home with the hope of fulfilled promises and conversations about Israel. It's a perfect gift to anyone for any occasion, and most of all, to yourself. You'll also be a blessing to Israel, knowing that the proceeds will go to bless Israelis of all backgrounds. Be a part of Israel the Miracle and bring the land, the people, and the state of Israel into your heart and into your home. Visit israelthemiracle.com to get your limited edition copy today.
My uncle, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., supported the truth of Acts 17:26. So this is my grandfather, my daddy, you hear me say it. Of one blood, God made all people to live together on the face of the earth. So my uncle was adamant about there being one blood and one human race. He recognized ethnicity. And that's why he was able to say, we must learn to live together as brothers and not perish together as fools. As a matter of fact, he said he dreamed of the day that there would be no black power, no white power, only God power.
Yeah.
And human power. That was one of his famous quotes. Yeah.
So thank you for that. That's it frames so much. And so, I mean, we could spend the next days rereading and listening to his speeches and his insight. I printed in front of me a few of his quotes specifically about Israel. And maybe let's jump to that right now, because, you know, he was very clear. He came and visited here once, and I understand he was planning to make a big trip. I read that he was planning to bring as many as 5,000 people. But it strikes me, I want to look and see if I have the chronology correctly, right? In reverse order, and I know in his mountaintop speech the night before he was assassinated, it was almost prophetic. He says, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead, but it really doesn't matter with me now because I've been to the mountaintop and I don't mind. Like anyone, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place, but I'm not concerned about that now. I would just want to do God's will, and he's allowed me to go up to the mountain.
Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
And it's been referenced that when he was speaking of the mountain, he was referring to being in Jerusalem. Is that correct from your understanding?
Well, I'm not so sure that would make a lot of sense, especially since he journeyed to Israel. When I was in Israel, I was on the Mount of Olives, and I wept. I just wept on the Mount of Olives, and I felt the Spirit of the Lord so strongly. And so it is very possible that that experience in Israel was impacting him. As he said that, he could have been speaking about Moses, who went to the mountaintop and received the Ten Commandments and then came down and they were worshiping idols. And he was very frustrated. And of course, God released those commandments again. So Martin Luther King Jr., as I say, had a genuine relationship with God. He knew God. Jesus was his Lord and Savior. And so I am just very sure, of course, Holy Spirit had to be very evident and alive in guiding and moving my uncle's life. And so with the angels of God, all of that. So it is very possible that those references of the mountain could have been inspired by that trip.
You know, could have been inspired. But as I said in the introduction, because it really is, they're very, when I think of my own parents, I get, and their death and absence in my life, I unavoidably get emotional. When I read Deuteronomy, the end of Deuteronomy and the end of Moses' life, I get the same kind of emotion. And when you said just a minute ago, Moses going up to the mountain, I wasn't thinking of Mount Sinai. I was thinking where his life ended, where God showed him the whole land, just as he did with your uncle. I mean, he didn't see the whole land, but he was certainly there where you saw the land and where you had that emotional experience. So I'm stirred by the same thing. About 10 days, if I'm not mistaken, before he was assassinated, he spoke at the annual convention of the Rabbinic Assembly. And his quote there is also very powerful. And I want to read it, and then I want to ask you to help me maybe unpack it, but also in the context of where we are today. He said, "The response of some of the so-called young militants does not represent the position of the vast majority of Negroes. There are some who are color consumed, and they see a kind of mystique in blackness or being colored, and anything non-colored is condemned. We do not follow that course. Peace for Israel means security, and we must stand with all of our might to protect its right to exist, its territorial integrity. I see Israel, and never mind saying it, as one of the great outposts of democracy in the world and a marvelous example of what can be done, how desert land almost can be transformed into an oasis of brotherhood and democracy. Peace for Israel means security, and that security must be a reality."
Friends, Israel's at war, and the war may get worse before it gets better. Much worse. It's going to be a long war because the enemy is the epitome of evil. It's not just a matter of overcoming troops on a battlefield, but overcoming a theology, an ideology, an evil one. While the Genesis 123 Foundation has been overwhelmed with the support of so many donations to the Israel Emergency Campaign, there's so much more that needs to be done. We've invested your donations that we've received so far strategically to make the biggest impact possible, whether helping with soldiers and their equipment and personal needs, to providing civilian security for outlying border communities, to relocating and settling several families from near the Gaza war zone, launching the global petition drive to support Israel in the face of pressure for a ceasefire, and long-term needs for at-risk children, traumatized now more than ever before. Please take a moment to pause this conversation right now and go to love.genesis123.co and donate generously. We value your trust, and we will keep all donors informed about how and where your donations are being used to contribute to make the biggest impact possible. And when you use that link, love.genesis123.co, you can also send your prayers and words of encouragement to Israelis of all backgrounds, just sending your love, something that we need so desperately. Thank you, and God bless you and your loved ones.
I think our responsibility in the Black community is to make it very clear that we must never confuse some with all. And certainly in SCLC, we have consistently condemned anti-Semitism. We have made it clear that we cannot be the victims of the notion that you deal with one evil in society by substituting another evil. We cannot substitute one tyranny for another. And for the Black man to be struggling for justice and then turn around and be anti-Semitic is not only an irrational course, it's a very immoral course. And wherever we have seen anti-Semitism, we have condemned it with all of our might. We've done it through our literature. We've done it through statements that I have personally signed. And I guess that's about all that we can do as an organization, to vigorously condemn anti-Semitism wherever it exists. Let me say on the Middle East crisis, there again, we have had various responses. The response of some of the so-called young militants, again, does not represent the position of the vast majority of Negroes. There are some who are color consumed, and they see a kind of mystique in Blackness or in being colored, and anything non-colored is condemned. We do not follow that course in the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and certainly most of the organizations in the civil rights movement do not follow that course. I think it is necessary to see what is basic and what is needed in the Middle East is peace. Peace for Israel is one thing. Peace for the Arab side of that world is another thing. Peace for Israel means security. We must stand with all of our might to protect its right to exist, its territorial integrity, and forever see Israel, and never mind saying it, as one of the great outposts of democracy in the world, the marvelous example of what can be done, how the desert land almost can be transformed into oasis of brotherhood and democracy. So that peace for Israel means security, and that security must be a reality.
Now, that's visionary. That's early 1968. Just after the Six-Day War, several months afterward. I know you said that he stood, we know this, it's historical record, that he stood with Israel as a man of God, as a man of ethics, and somebody who, as you said, studied philosophy. But there was something. Can you help us understand maybe where that came from? Or maybe it was just his innate sense of bravery and moral clarity that he would be so outspoken at a time that was really not very popular.
Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s dad, Martin Luther King Sr., my granddaddy, Daddy King, his grandfather was Nathan Branham King. And Nathan came out of County Cork, an Irishman. Mama King's folks came off the west coast of Africa. And that is easily determined. So he already knew that worshiping skin color, he made the reference to the issue of skin color, worshiping skin color can be idolatry. He also knew about Jesus Christ, and he was considering eternity. in eternity, we have to have the Lordship of Christ in order for God to be our Father. So these were all of the different realities and understandings. And while he was in Israel, the reality of Jesus Christ, his life, his birth, his life, his crucifixion and his resurrection, and even understanding that he would come back. He had come to preach the kingdom of God. He was crucified. He rose again. And he will be back. You have to understand all of this was in the understanding of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And all of that gave him the influence in the writings and the narratives. And it still comes back to, we must learn to live together as brothers and not perish together as fools. And in the spirit and in eternity, there's no male or female, bond or free, Gentile or Jew. Only Christ, all in all, in order for God to be our Father. Now, people will argue, well, everybody's going to meet God. Everybody. And that's true. Everybody's going to meet the Creator, whether you believe that or not. And so when you go to court, don't you want the judge to be your father? That would be an argument that I'm sure my uncle probably would agree with. So all of that, it kind of all ties in together as you speak that. And not that Martin Luther King Jr. was a complex man. He was not. But he was a man who loved and served God. That's really what people need to understand.
So it makes sense from that, that he, and also that Blacks and Jews in America, not at the same level, but were certainly discriminated against in the 1950s and 1960s.
Right. Right.
It makes sense that Blacks and Jews would be allies, and there's so many records of that. And he could have been just a gracious colleague in that, but he was an outspoken ally advocate. What's happened? It's a lot of years. It's almost 60 years, but it seems that that's unraveled quite a bit. I love your perspective on that. You have the perspective from being a young woman when he was assassinated, now to somebody who's been around the block more than a few times and see what's going on. Where have we come unraveled that he would be so distraught about?
I'm not necessarily saying that we've become unraveled. We can maybe be kind of asleep or unaware, maybe unaware more so than unraveled, because if you do not teach truth in every generation, every decade, and on every platform, it'll seem as though you're unraveled or you're moving backwards. I would not necessarily fully embrace that thought, because truth crushed to earth will rise again, and it always does. Now, in those generations where it's not there, And of course, we're talking about my uncle and we're talking about Israel. But look at other issues as well. There are seasons where you have more things like more abortion and more human trafficking and more transgender issues. Now, none of those are new. They've gone on since the fall of man and woman in the Garden of Eden. You can go all the way back from Genesis and move forward and find all of those issues. You can certainly go back to Abraham and Sarah and Hagar and find that particular breach when Abraham's two sons were pitted against each other by the decision of two women, unfortunately. So sometimes, but see, we can argue even with Adam and Eve, and this is not so popular. People don't like to hear it. So we would like to say, well, if it hadn't been for Eve, Adam would not have eaten the fruit. But Adam could have said no. Honey, I don't think so. Let's not do this. Let's go talk to God. We know God. I know God. So let's go talk to God. And no, Adam didn't have to partake, you know?
You're right.
And Abraham didn't have to go in Sarah's, in Hagar's room. But when those kinds of things have happened for various reasons, man and woman, David and Bathsheba, were both wrong. They were both wrong. So when you have all these issues, that's how man and woman, my uncle called it man's inhumanity to man. But human beings have these breaches, and you have to have that reconciliation and the healing and mending through the blood of Jesus. And so everybody doesn't agree with that. So I don't ever argue or debate over it. But my uncle, Martin Luther King Jr., was very clear about his relationship with Jesus Christ. He was very clear about that.
What and the positions that are so overrepresented in liberal society, was he outspoken on those? It wasn't as prevalent then.
None of that during Martin Luther King Jr.'s lifetime. None of that during Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s lifetime. And when I refer to that, abortion was not legal in America.
Right.
Except I think in New York during his lifetime. Transgender surgeries, they might have been experimentally going on in secret chambers, but not publicly. Human trafficking has always been in America and always been around the world, and sex trafficking, unfortunately. However, there are not things that he wrote or said about those issues because they were not as prevalent. The skin color wars were going on, but as we say, his answer to that would have been Acts 17:26, one blood, one human race. So those are things. Now, militarism, and Jesus said there would be wars and rumors of wars. Martin Luther King wanted peace. He wanted nonviolence and peace. And so he cared, certainly, and my dad and granddaddy and he and our whole family, and that is really part of our legacy, the poor and the least of these. Jesus said they would be with us, but we must have compassion for the widows, the prisoners, the poor. And so that is something that he would have written about and spoken about more so.
You know, it's interesting. I didn't save the quotes, but as adamant and public as he was in terms of his unequivocal support for Israel, he also spoke about, I don't remember if the word was justice, it may very well have been, for Arabs. Now, of course, in 1968, it was only brand new for people referring to our neighbors here as Palestinians. That had only been in vogue for 4 or 5 years. The last 4 or 5 years of his life, to refer to Palestinians as Palestinian Arabs as the people who were here as our neighbors, but he referred to them as more of a downtrodden group of people. I don't want to put words in his mouth, God forbid, but it was almost as if he was saying that they were a little bit backwards in their society and therefore needed some support. And no less justice, but that wasn't in place of Israel. It was alongside of Israel.
He would say injustice anywhere is, yes, a threat to justice everywhere. That's one of his most famous quotes. I would like to share my own testimony in Israel and my mother, Dr. Naomi Ruth Barber King, an experience that she had before she passed away into glory. In 2024, she had the opportunity to visit Israel. And while she was there, there was a documentary being filmed about her life. And you can find that on YouTube and places like that, Dr. Naomi Ruth Barber King. So when mom was there, there was a reporter, a journalist in her group. And the journalist was killed by Palestinians, I think it was, because she got too close to the fire, too close to the fray. My mother was not with the group at that time, but when they told her, she says, take me down there right now.
Really?
And so they called me on the phone. Your mother says she's going down there. And she says, it's active, they're shooting, they're killing people. I said, if she says she's going down there, she'll get down there. So take her. So she went down and began to lecture the Jews and the Arabs. She's telling them, she says, I don't know why you're doing that. Your father is Abraham. You're not even cousins. You're brothers. Why are you doing this? Stop it. You're supposed to get along. She's arguing with the soldiers on either side, yelling at them, really. So on one side of her wheelchair, the Arabs took her and the other ones, the Jews, the soldiers. They were all in their uniforms with guns, and they picked up the wheelchair and started running her out of danger.
That's remarkable.
That actually happened. And when I was there, I went to the markets, and God told me, he says, shop at every tent, the Christian tent, the Jews, and the Arabs, okay? And I did, and there, I think they call them Druze or something like that. There are various communities where the seed of Abraham, whether they are of Sarah or Hagar, they marry each other. They don't fight with each other. They have children together.
Right.
So there we are with this kind of environment. And if you look at their homes look almost a little confused to me because they look half Arab and half Jew, even in the architecture. It's the oddest thing. So we are supposed to get along. I believe that my uncle believed that he understood Acts 17:26, one blood, one rose. And so we're on that journey. And it there every generation, every decade, every platform in the spirit, no Gentile or Jew, male or female, bond or free, only Christ all in all.
Well, I'm so glad you shared that. That's one insight about your uncle that I didn't have. And I think you know this, that I went to Emory back in the 80s. And it's a funny story I learned, and I grew up like this in terms of race, that when I... Today, if you're applying to a college, I think there's probably a whole page of boxes you can check identifying what race you think you might be. But when I remember so vividly when I applied to college, there were maybe three or four, and the white, black, I don't remember Asian, I don't remember what they all were, but I checked the box other, and I wrote,
I always do that.
And did I wrote human. Human.
That's what I've always done too when others there. So lately, I had to do one the other day, and it said black, and I totally don't agree with it, but I was just tired and needed to get the application done, and they didn't have an other on the line. Yeah.
So you gave it. We're of the same mind, and maybe that's part of, at least now, almost 60 years after his death, part of his legacy that we always need to remember. It doesn't matter how we look, the color of our skin, the color of our eyes, anything that might be physically different. I mean, we're about to, I tell people this, maybe I even told you this, we're about to celebrate the wedding of my youngest daughter, who's marrying a wonderful young man. His family is all from Yemen, and he's darker than many African Americans. And
yeah, I would say not darker, because you know people dark is supposed to this or that. I would say he's more brown than many African Americans.
Okay, I accept
his skin tone is richer or deeper. You know,
correct.
And, so you can maybe edit that out or whatever. But
right, yeah. It's certainly not meant with any disrespect.
I know it's not, but I'm just saying this easier. So.
No, I appreciate that. I appreciate that clarification.
You can take this one. Let me make, you know, in the various communities, people will say light skin, dark skin.
Yes.
Now, I could kind of get that because nobody looks like a black, you know, keys on the keyboard or white, like a white piece of paper. Nobody looks like that. So we will say black and brown, but even in the darkest, blackest skin in Africa, you can see the purples and the magentas that are underlying there. You can really see that. So that's what I'm saying. You know, fair skin, brown skin with deeper skin tones. You know, so that's something just like getting people not to say your race needs to get along with my race.
No.
You know, your ethnic community, my ethnic community. Those kinds of things. So those are, we learn that as we grow.
Correct. Well, I'm grateful for having that conversation with you.
I'm going to leave you now. For those who want to know more about Alveda King, visit alvedaking.com. I have a lot of music on YouTube and other things as well. So I do music, film, commentaries. I'm a USDA farmer. People say, what aren't you? I've been a school teacher, a state legislator, a presidential appointee, but I'm terrible with math. I didn't do so well in science, those kinds of things. That wasn't me. So we all have various gifts and talents, and we put them together without jealousy or competition. I think that pleases God, and we get to grow.
You're right. You do have a remarkable voice, and it surprised me in such a pleasant way that night that we had the Shabbat dinner together, and completely unrehearsed, you sang one of the Psalms so beautifully. It was really remarkable. So, yes.
I sing Psalms a lot. I sing those out of the Bible a lot. So.
Yeah, you're remarkable. Dr. Alveda King, it's a delight. I'm so blessed that we're in touch. I know this is an ongoing, I pray that this is an ongoing relationship, and that this is just one way that we get to experience this together. And thank you so much for taking time today and for sharing a bit about your uncle, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, and his legacy this week as we remember the anniversary of his assassination. As we always say in Judaism, and it's true, may his memory always be a blessing.
Amen. Shalom.
Shalom. Thank you so much.
Thank you very kindly, Rabbi Miller. Some years ago, John Donne wrote in graphic terms, "No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. If a clod be washed away by the sea, Europe is a less, as well as if a promontory were, as well as if a manor of thy friends or thine own self were. Any man's death diminishes me, because I am involved in mankind. Therefore, never sin to know for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee." These challenging words affirming the interdependence and interrelatedness of all mankind are particularly relevant when we think of the plight of 3 million Jews in the Soviet Union. No person of goodwill can stand by as a silent onlooker while there is a possibility of the complete spiritual and cultural destruction of a once flourishing Jewish community. A denial of human rights anywhere is a threat to the affirmation of human rights everywhere. Jewish communal life is deprived by the Soviet government of elementary needs to sustain even a modest level of existence and growth. In a form of society in which publishing, the operation of institutions, and the acquisition of facilities are under government control, individual initiative cannot substitute for state omissions, and the result is a withered and restricted Jewish community. While Jews in Russia may not be physically murdered as they were in Nazi Germany, they are facing every day a kind of spiritual and cultural genocide. Individual Jews may in the main be physically and economically secured in Russia, but the absence of opportunity to associate as Jews in the enjoyment of Jewish culture and religious experience becomes severe limitations upon the individual. These deprivations are part of a person's emotional and intellectual life and determine whether he is fulfilled as a human being. Negroes can well understand and sympathize with this problem. When you are written out of history as a people, when you are given no choice but to accept the majority culture, you are denied an aspect of your own identity. Ultimately, you suffer a corrosion of your self-understanding and self-respect. The official answers by the Soviet government assert that it is providing as much as the Jewish community actually desires. But that is abundant evidence that this is untrue. Unofficial answers that imply state security is involved because Jews have international ties are even more unsatisfactory. In the 30s, when the Soviet Union was vastly less secure than it is today, it officially encouraged a flourishing of Jewish culture. The insensitivity of the Soviet Union on this question is properly a subject for criticism and protest. Without making it part of Cold War politics, world opinion is justified in reminding them that they are repressing a cultural heritage that is world property. Jewish history and culture are part of everyone's heritage, whether he be Jewish, Christian, or Muslim. The Soviet Union must recognize the legitimate criticism that insists it accord fair treatment to its Jewish community. If that government expects respect for itself in the international community of nations, the sincere and genuine concern felt by so many people around the world for this problem should impel the Soviet government not only to effect a solution, but to do so with all deliberate speed. In the meantime, let us continue to make our voices heard and our righteous protests felt. We cannot sit complacently by the wayside while our Jewish brothers in the Soviet Union face the possible extinction of their cultural and spiritual life. Those that sit at rest while others take pains are tender turtles, and by their quiet with disgrace.
Done now for years, the Genesis 123 Foundation wants to thank you for following our programs and wants to offer you a special gift. Each month, we'll be giving away a special volume. We call it From Jonathan's Bookshelf. And for more than a year, about a year and a half now, that's been a copy of our stunning and highly acclaimed book, Israel the Miracle. All you need to do is go to the Inspiration from Zion social media and like and follow us. And when you comment and share a link to this program there, we will select one person at random each month to receive your own copy of Israel the Miracle as our gift to you. We're also blessed that Dr. Alveda King wrote a lovely endorsement, which is included at the beginning of the book. We're grateful that this podcast is sponsored by our friends at the Willow Run Greenhouse in Culpeper, Virginia. If you're ever in the area, please go say hi and thank them for helping make conversations like this possible. And also thanks to the Coyne family as well for their meaningful sponsorship. Inspiration from Zion and all the Genesis 123 Foundation programs are made possible by donations, so please consider joining us to help continue the dialogue and build bridges. If you'd like to sponsor a future episode in honor or memory of a loved one or special occasion, please be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com. And as appropriate, this week, this episode is in memory of one who I consider to not just be a legend, but a tremendous hero, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and his memory and his legacy. We love to hear your comments as part of a dialogue and invite you to send any questions as well, especially questions you have about traditional Judaism for our Ask the Rabbi programs. Please share this with others who will also find it of interest and continue to join us right here to hear more meaningful conversations about unique topics relating to Israel that you won't hear anywhere else. Wherever you are in the world, I pray that you and your loved ones are all safe and healthy, and I send my blessings from right here in the Judean Mountains. God bless you.